Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rule of Magic by Martha Carr and Michael Enderley. Narrated by Eva Wilhelm. Chapter 1. The green Mustang was parked on Viewpoint Drive on the south side of Austin, a few houses down from the rancher painted the colors of a dreamsicle. Pale orange and not quite white. The tall palm tree in the front yard rustled in the wind as the large fronds lifted, pointing toward the east.
"This is where the magical rainbow ended? Doesn't seem like much."
Felix Hagen narrowed his eyes, looking at the broken shutters on the front of the house.
"You'd think someone who knows how to use dark magic would fix up the place."
The necklace leaves a strong trail for anyone magical to follow. This kid definitely had it for a while, but it's not here now. It hasn't been long, though. Lyra centered herself and drew up enough energy to see the bright, glittering trail mixed in with the teenager's weak, twisting, magical path. The darkness was already doing its best to pull the kid in closer.
"They're keeping the necklace moving to stay ahead of us and the Silver Griffins. It's not going to be easy to catch someone with it in their possession," said Corrick.
"Like they're playing a giant game of whack-a-mole with us."
Hagen grimaced as his stomach gurgled. "The mastermind behind all of this chose this kid for a reason. I want to know why. That's the very thing that may help us finally get ahead of the necklace. Lois has it from a reliable source that there's some kind of meeting happening today with the local followers. We wait and we follow." Lyra stretched, arching her back. They had already been there for hours. The tip from the older witch didn't include an exact time or place.
"Good old-fashioned stakeout. I like it," said Hagen, blowing on his coffee.
It was early in the morning and nothing else was stirring except for a young woman walking a small white chihuahua. Lyra watched as the dog took a few steps and sat down till the woman gave a couple of tugs on the leash. The woman gave up half a block later and picked up the dog. "We should take Yumfuck on walks. It'd be good for him." Lyra watched the woman tuck the dog into her jacket till only its head was showing.
"Yumfuck takes himself on walks when we are not around."
Corrick stretched out in the back seat, drinking a cherry Dr. Pepper. He was wearing his cowboy boots, his feet propped up on the far door handle.
"What would that even look like? Would he put a tiny harness on him like he's a toddler?"
Hagen shifted in the passenger seat in the front. His dark blue PDA jacket rustled as he turned.
"Tell people he's some kind of South American cat? I'll bet people would buy that."
"Did you remember to keep him in his nest this time?"
Corrick searched through the bag next to him. He pulled out a plastic sleeve of frozen Thin Mint cookies and slid one into his mouth, letting it slowly melt on his tongue.
"Yum."
"You're starting to sound like Yumfuck." Lyra reached over the back of the seat and took one of the cookies. Corrick arched an eyebrow.
"Okay, so you got me on these," she said. "It's a Thin Mint. Love for them is universal. At least I occasionally eat a vegetable. You should try a carrot or a beet. Think of it as research into something actually grown on Earth."
"I ate a potato last night."
"Chip. You ate a chip. Doesn't count. At some point, if you fry anything, it doesn't count as food anymore."
Lyra was still distracted by the trails of energy. Something wasn't right. She could feel the darkness pulling at the young man's energy. It had a familiar taste to it.
"That thing from the world in between."
"That a rule?"
"Common sense."
"It's true," Hagen grumbled, looking out the window. "Heard the same thing myself recently."
Lyra took a long look at him. Corrick slid another cookie into his mouth, staring at Lyra as he bit down on the cookie.
"I was supporting the small trio of girls in their quest."
She looked back at him and let out a snort. "Those little girls saw you coming. Miniature little geniuses leaning into a badge for marketing. They set up by the Wagabag and are catching all the early morning party people trying to get coffee. And you."
"This is my first magical stakeout. I gotta say, not as exciting as I pictured."
Hagen lifted up off the seat and hitched up his pants as he peered out the window looking for anything unusual.
"Just how much magic does this kid have?"
"That's the third time you've done that. What's different about you? Why aren't you eating?"
Lyra narrowed her eyes, licking the chocolate off her fingers. She glanced at his coffee as her eyes widened.
No cream, either. You've finally gone and done it. You're eating healthy.
Healthy, Lyra gave him her best dead fish look.
Thanks, that's sweet. Hagen smiled. I appreciate that. You know just how to say you care without the rest of it.
Very touching, like watching two icicles slowly melting, said Korik.
Ignore him. Okay, spill it, Hagen. You've raised hiding food to the level of a cat burglar, and now you voluntarily quit cold turkey? What happened?
I passed that treadmill test, but just barely. Doc said if I kept eating the same way, in a few years I was going to have some real trouble.
That was a few years ago, wasn't it? Lyra reached into the back seat for another cookie. Korik arched an eyebrow again and slowly moved them out of her reach.
No. I offered to get you your own, and you turned me down. I warned you about that the last time we got pizza.
Lyra pinched his leg. I don't want a whole box. I just want a few of yours. They'd be happy to sell you more.
Korik sent out a pea-sized fireball as Lyra ducked.
You two are killing me.
Hagen frowned as he glanced back at the cookies. He turned toward the window till he couldn't see them anymore.
If you must know, it was only last week. I made the mistake of taking Rose with me. We get home, and next thing I know, she's pulling out our wedding photos. She was propping up pictures of a younger, thinner me all over the house. My life was flashing before my eyes everywhere I went. She saved the fat me for the door of the fridge.
Rose should interrogate prisoners. She manages to seem loving while playing with your mind. Eventually, you want to help her put you away.
Lyra glared at Korik. He was putting spray cheese on a thin mint.
Dude, that is nasty.
She rolled her eyes and turned away.
Hagen looked out the window, sipping his black coffee.
If it helps, you do look better, said Lyra. What did you do with your donut stash? I feel like a food pusher now.
Not bad.
Korik pulled out another cookie.
Lyra listened to the sound of the cheese spray and squeezed her eyes shut.
Take a look in the back seat. It'll help your diet.
No thanks. I want to remember junk food in a good way. His stomach gurgled again as he let out a sigh. I brought the whole pile to the precinct when I went to say goodbye. Looked like a hero, so thank you for that.
Hagen grimaced, throwing up his hands.
Time to turn a page.
He stole a glance at Korik, but quickly turned back.
Oh, fuck me, that is bad. Don't ruin the memory of food for me.
Hey, isn't that the little pisser?
Lyra opened her eyes, leaning over the steering wheel.
Finally, what is he doing?
The young man took a furtive glance around as he pulled out a wand and mumbled something, pointing his wand at the four corners of his house.
Korik sat up, swinging his legs around as he dropped the cookies back into the bag.
He is doing a kind of glamour spell, but in reverse. The house will glow brightly from a block away for anyone with an invitation. Apparently, the meeting is here and is imminent. That spell doesn't last very long.
A blue Lexus pulled up in front of the house, and an older man with neatly slicked back silver hair got out, buttoning his long cashmere coat.
One lone wizard. Things are getting interesting.
The palms of Lyra's hands grew warm. She could feel the wizard's energy pulsing in the air.
He's got chops.
He doesn't look like anybody's flunky.
Hagen set his cup down in the holder between the seats.
Is the necklace with him?
Lyra pulled in energy through her feet as her eyes began to glow. She sent out a stream to investigate his energy. It was strong and full of a shimmering darkness.
That's a first. Never felt such a strong... It's like he's built a wall around his intentions. Really hard to detect much of anything.
Lyra let her magic coil around, looking for the telltale signs, opening herself up to feeling just a trace of the man's inner thoughts.
Don't... Korik leaned forward and put a hand on Lyra's shoulder, but it was too late.
The man stopped suddenly and sharply turned his head, scowling in the direction of the Mustang. He swiftly lifted his arms, sending out a pulse of energy just wide enough to hit the Mustang and nothing else, making it rock hard on its wheels. Lyra clamped her hands on her head as the force of the magic slammed down on her, throwing her back against the seat.
Hagen hit the passenger side door hard, his head banging against the window, knocking the wind out of him. He wheezed once or twice, trying to draw back in some small amount of air while keeping his attention on the man, but it was too hard. His chest felt like it was going to explode.
What the fuck?
His eyes watered as he pressed his palms hard against his stomach. Korik closed his eyes, shutting out every distraction. He drew on the reserves of his own energy, fighting off the crushing pulse. Every muscle was straining as he raised his arm, the bicep rippling from the effort. He put out a hand, straining toward Lyra till he found her shoulder, connecting himself to her energy, guiding the blue and silver stream around the Mustang, shutting out the dark pulse. At last, the car stopped rocking. Hagen felt a gush of air fill his lungs, making him lightheaded. Small bursts of light flashed in front of his eyes as he blinked rapidly, trying to get it to stop. Lyra felt her shoulders lift, and she was finally able to take her hands off her head and focus. Korik's magic was calming, and she was able to feel him gently steering her.
"What the fuck just happened?"
Hagen was finally able to get out a complete sentence. Lyra alerted a wizard with very powerful dark magic that we were intruding on his plans. He retaliated with a simple but effective energy pulse. Korik finally sat back against the seat. His entire body ached.
"Was that the fucking boogeyman?"
Hagen wiped the drool off his chin, still trying to get his bearings. Lyra let the magic gradually lessen and the glow fade from her eyes.
"Sorry about that. I had no idea."
She looked out the window. The man and his car were gone. "I'm going to go ahead and say the kid is gone, along with the wizard. Did you know him, Korik?"
"No, but I recognized the energy, or at least his kind. He's very powerful and has been practicing dark magic for a long time. They tend to have short tempers and can retaliate in ways we may not even see coming. Believe it or not, that was just a warning shot."
"A warning?"
Hagen swallowed hard.
"Feels like someone tried to hollow out my guts with a spoon."
"He's not the one who's behind all of this. I could feel it in his energy, the little I got out of him."
Her thoughts were coming to her in pieces as she worked to recover from the blast.
"He's following someone else."
Lyra knitted her brows together, worried.
"If that's a new follower of Rosden's old teachings, then how powerful is their new master?"
Korik finished her thought without saying what he already knew.
"It has to be the traitor among the prophets."
Lyra's phone buzzed, and she looked down to see who was texting her.
"It's General Anderson. There's a case. Korik, we'll drop you off first. Figure out our next step with the necklace later."
Chapter 2 Charlie Monahan stood on the wide granite steps of his house on River Road in Richmond, Virginia. Only in Richmond, in the polite circles of old families and old money, would a mansion with 10 bedrooms and just as many bathrooms be referred to as a house. It was a sign of new wealth to talk about money. Charlie was new money, but he got that rule. He was waiting for the young man, Langston Rogers, to park his old Ford Escort in front of Charlie's neatly trimmed English boxwoods along the circular driveway. Charlie kept the smile plastered on his face despite his irritation that he was even having to go through the motions. He only agreed to meet the young college professor because he was from his alma mater, Virginia Commonwealth University, and was an old friend's grandson. That and the grandfather reached out personally and struck a deal.
"I am all about the deal."
15 minutes of Charlie's time to get Langston to hopefully let this all go, take on something more suitable, in exchange for the man's proxy on a few keyboards. Charlie was certain the young man was too coddled and slightly off. His emails all talked about an important discovery made in Peru and a powerful artifact. Charlie emailed him back out of curiosity and asked, "Powerful to do what?" But Langston insisted it had to be seen to be believed and would revolutionize manufacturing. At first, Charlie deleted the emails, all 53 of them, but then his grandfather called and asked for that favor. He raised his hand and gave a short wave as Langston got out of the car. Charlie was neatly dressed in expensive slacks and a cashmere sweater over a soft-collared shirt and soft leather loafers, perfect for the mild winter.
"Langston, good to see you. Your grandfather speaks so highly of you.
He stood aside and let the young man go ahead of him, even though he had no idea where to turn once he stepped into the large foyer. It was a familiar tactic of Charlie's to put someone immediately off their game. The young man blushed and stuttered, "After you," still turning in a circle as he looked up at the high ceiling. Charlie smiled graciously and showed him to the wide doors that led to the library.
"I'm sorry about the limited time. Just about 15 minutes. This was all last minute, and I have a golf game to get to. Can't leave my friends waiting at the first tee."
He waved his hands around as he talked.
"Of course. I appreciate the time. I'll get this started."
Langston fumbled with an ornate wooden box he was carrying, setting it down with a thud on Charlie's antique oak desk. A momentary wince passed across Charlie's face, but he let it go.
13 minutes.
Langston put both hands inside of the box, gingerly lifting out a metal wheel decorated all the way around the rim in hieroglyphics. He laid it carefully on the desk and took a short, hollow brass metal pipe out of his pocket, giving the wheel a solid hit in a specific pattern across the symbols. Each time he made contact, the wheel let out a loud ding in a perfect pitch of C. On the 12th ding, the wheel started to rattle on the desk as Charlie took a step back. The symbols along the rim lit up and the wheel lifted, spinning in a circle, rotating a few degrees to the east with each turn. The smile froze on Charlie's face as he watched.
"It's an impressive magic trick."
"What the hell?"
"Just keep watching."
The wheel spun even faster until sparks flew out, some of the cinders landing on the heirloom rug quickly sputtering out. An opening emerged, the size of a window, just above Charlie's desk, and he found himself staring at the backside of a tree. He took a step forward, blinking his eyes to see if he could detect the edges of the illusion.
"It's real. It's real.
It's fucking real!"
Langston looked at him and smiled, a sheen of sweat across his face.
"It's a tree, in a world called Orisaren."
Charlie stepped closer and felt the warm air on his face while the smell of blossoms filled his nose.
"Not Earth?"
He cautiously put out his hand and felt the bark of the tree.
"That's an elm," he said in a hushed tone.
"Who goes there?"
A loud, angry voice shouted from somewhere in the depths of the forest. Charlie quickly pulled back his hand as the gardener of the dark forest appeared in front of them, his four pupils all focused on Charlie. The gardener saw the spinning wheel and leaned out of the portal toward the desk. Charlie froze where he was, unsure for once in his life what to do. Langston quickly hit the sides of the wheel again, sending a shower of gold sparks as the portal shrunk in size, sucking the wood elf back to Orisaren and closing with a loud pop. The wheel slowed its spinning, finally coming to rest as Charlie came closer, scrutinizing it over and over again, saying nothing.
"You had it half right," said Langston. "It's magic, but it's not a trick."
"Can't be magic. Has to be science. Why didn't your grandfather mention this?"
Charlie was stunned, his mind spinning.
"Because I never told him. He would have told the world before they were ready. Something like this has to be handled correctly, or it could cause panic. I knew you were the right person. All of your connections? I mean, your company stretches across the globe. You know every important politician, every foreign leader. You could help tell the world."
"Langston, what you just did. I'm not even sure what I just saw."
Langston smiled and shook his head.
"Sorry, I do that. I get so excited I forget to fill in the details. But I knew I had to show you before I told you, or you would have kicked me out of here. That hole that you saw just hanging there in space, it's called a portal. And that tree you touched is in another world, in another dimension. They call it Orisaren. Over there, magic is commonplace. It's more like a form of energy that runs through everything that lives on the planet."
"In one of your emails, you mentioned something about that place. How do you pronounce it?"
Charlie walked across the rug where the portal had opened up.
"There's nothing here."
His mind worked to hold on to the idea.
"It's like bad mushrooms. Never liked being high, either. No control.
Fuck. Orisarin. I found all of these ancient writings that talked about gates and portals inside of a large vault, along with that wheel. Think of it this way. The same way electricity revolutionized this country, another kind of magical energy at the time. Take that and multiply it by 1,000. That wheel? He pointed at the wheel, his face flush with excitement. It's like a battery.
It holds this energy. Charlie was taking in shallow breaths, fighting to maintain his composure.
Exactly. The last time the gates were closing, the ancients poured their energy into it to store for later use. The missing capstone from the top of the Great Pyramid in Egypt? A crystal artifact that someone else got to first. You see what I'm saying? These artifacts are everywhere.
Langston's voice cracked from the excitement.
Who's taking them?
Charlie sat down in his leather chair, trying not to let it show how fast his heart was beating.
There's lots of theories. Foreign governments, large corporations, treasure seekers. There are thousands of these artifacts, so probably all of those theories are correct.
How did I not know?
Charlie muttered to himself. He was always prepared, always watching the bigger picture, but this got right by him.
It's not too late. Only a small fraction of what's believed to be out there has been found.
Langston's face lit up and he smiled, his eyes shining.
It's not even the best part.
There's more.
Charlie gripped the sides of his chair, doing his best to give his trademark smile, showing every pearly white tooth.
Here's the only thing that really matters. Every 25,800 years, there are these gates that are much larger than that small portal you saw. Huge gates! These gates open and stay open for thousands of years. Beings from Orisarin crossed over to Earth and vice versa.
Langston waved his arms over his head.
The last one was over 13 millennia ago, and magic was just as commonplace here on Earth.
Langston pressed his hands down toward the floor.
That golden year takes thousands of years to get here, but the gates will start to open in just a few more years, slowly at first, but with each slight opening, more of that energy we call magic will pour into Earth.
That's a lot of information.
The ability to transform and create using a pure form of energy that comes from within is coming back to Earth. Magic! But we need to be ready.
I'm going to need more proof, Langston.
I'm all in. I can use this. Transform the economy.
I thought you'd say that, and I brought along a little more to show you.
Langston reached into his backpack and pulled out a wooden goblet, placing it on the desk.
Doesn't look like much. Take it in your hands and hold it. Go on.
Charlie looked up at Langston, hesitating. Not his usual nature. He slowly picked up the goblet and held it in his hands, the smile fading from his face, replaced with a sense of awe. A warm feeling of peace rose up through his body, settling in his chest. It was a new feeling for Charlie and unsettled him. He put the goblet back down and looked at the red glow in the palms of his hands. Langston smiled at Charlie and shook his head.
It's like it can teach you to be happy or something. I'm pretty sure that's not what it was intended for, but I can't figure out anything more. According to what I've read, there are some artifacts that require you to be magical to access their powers, like it's part of your DNA or something. Can you imagine? But even still, it gives off this cool vibe.
Is it your plan to gather artifacts and relics and just wait for the gates to open? Is this some kind of negotiation tool when the beings from Orisarin walk through the gates?
Langston laughed and shook his head again.
I did it again. Left out an important detail.
He slapped his leg in excitement.
That's not necessary. It says it throughout all the documents I've found. They're already here, thousands of them, living right alongside all of us. A lot of them stayed the last time the gates closed. We can negotiate with them now. Think of the problems we might be able to solve, but we have to get to the artifacts first.
I see your point, said Charlie, rising out of his chair.
Let me cancel my golf game. We need to talk.
Charlie Monahan liked to be prepared, and he was already a little behind. First order of business, look for a way to harness the new energy, he thought as he texted the Country Club of Virginia. Start playing without me. Something came up.
They'll just have to understand. There's a deal on the table, and it's going to be mine.
Do we need to keep calling it magic? Seems like we just found some new kind of oil, but this one is in a lot more places.
You can call it whatever you want, but most do call it magic.
Bending the laws of physics from within the biology of the practitioner in new ways to alter the environment.
Langston shrugged.
Magic.
Chapter 3. Harkin wove through the dark market, dodging under a wizard's arm who was sampling a piece of technology floating in the air. It pitched left to right, and with each turn, changed the air currents flowing around it. Harkin felt the air blow across the back of his neck, then turn and blow again in the other direction.
"That's a children's toy," said the wizard, eyeing the spinning cylinder. "I'm not paying that kind of money to blow wind."
Harkin shook his head and kept moving.
Neither one of them knows what they have.
The wizard was starting to bargain, but he was cut short by a hard nudge to his ribs, knocking him out of the way. The compact engine bubbled in the air, cut off by its source of magic. The vendor put his hand out in time to catch the modified turbine before it plummeted to the packed dirt floor. The vendor was an old gnome who looked up in time to see the light elf, Wolfston Humphrey, growl at the wizard.
"How much?"
asked Wolfston as he glared from beneath his woolen hood at the vendor. The wrinkles around the gnome's eyes deepened.
10 pintas.
He rubbed his chin, ready to bargain.
"You'll take 9.
There was an icy edge to Wolfston's voice. Harkin felt a sharp pain of recognition run through him at the sound of Wolfston's voice behind him. He jerked his head around to get a better look. The crowd blocked his view. Wolfston noticed Harkin peering over the crowd, and a smile spread across his face.
"Still alive. Good to know," he whispered. "I wonder if Corrick knows."
He drew the shadows around him, snatching the piece of machinery, and let the money fall to the ground before disappearing in a blur.
"Hey, I said 10!
Shouted the gnome, throwing up his hands.
"Thieves and liars!"
he muttered, counting his money as he shuffled inside his booth. Harkin stood in the center of the path, peering into the still swirling shadows in the middle of the big tent.
"Not possible," he hissed. "You are dead. I killed you myself."
"Harkin, back for more abuse."
Malik had ventured outside of his tent, surrounded by his large bodyguards.
"You seem lost. The exit is behind you."
Harkin glanced one more time at the gnome's booth, the light spilling back in front of it, and at Malik.
"What are you doing out here? Did the dark market finally raise its standards?"
Malik snorted, a smile not getting past his sneer. His wings ruffled and folded in closer to his body.
"You get rid of all the thugs and the place would be nearly empty."
Harkin folded his arms across his broad chest and widened his stance. It was as good a place as any to startle Malik into saying something.
"You're selling my parts to someone else."
Malik's smile spread as he stepped toward Harkin.
"Free trade, light elf. You didn't think you were terminally unique, did you? Times are changing."
Harkin steadied his breathing and kept his voice low and even.
"Wolfston Humphrey will get the best of you, and then he'll leave you for dead."
He saw a flicker of recognition in Malik's eyes and felt a cold dread spread over him.
"I didn't ruffle your feathers, did I?"
Lincoln turned his head away, his remaining eye scanning the crowd.
"I would have thought you'd known better, Lincoln."
Malik screwed up his face, stepped back, and spat into the dirt.
"I've been doing this a long time and traded with a lot worse than you."
"I'm not worried for you, Malik. If you want your feathers plucked, that's your call. You've never come up against someone like Humphrey. I tell you what, tell me where I can find him, and I'll trade you a little information about him."
"Right, because so many buyers are looking for parts that work in biotechnology."
He let out an annoyed breath, his arms still crossed. Lincoln's fingers grazed across the hilt of his blade.
"Have it your way."
Harkin stepped back at
Sample complete. Ready to continue?